She saw, because the absolute letter and the spirit were indivisibly one, it could be taught. She saw why and how it could be taught. Concerning the words written in Science and Health, she saw that they are truth, and they are life. As we learn the character of God through studying the seven synonyms for God, infinite good, and their qualities and attributes, we become like them. Our thought becomes godlike, since we are culturing that necessary spiritual sense which is a conscious, constant capacity to understand God. In this way, the Word becomes flesh. Not only once in the history of humanity was the Word made flesh, but every day and every hour it is occurring. As we choose to abide in the living Word, the Word is being made flesh. Sick bodies are being made whole. Consciousness constructs a better body through abiding in the living Word, in the seven synonyms for God. Pondering the references. As before stated, we begin to study the system she denominated Christian Science by pondering each reference to each of the seven synonymous terms. That is the first step. We study with the awareness that love is the generic term for God. Love formed the Trinity, truth, life, and love. The Trinity no man can sunder. The divine metaphysics that she reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live, refers to this love that is the generic term for God, that is above and beyond all mortal conceptions of love. In the human, this love can only be seen and understood as it is expressed in love for our fellow man. The system she denominated Christian Science must lead us to an ever higher sense of love and goodwill to all whom our thought rests upon, to all with whom we have dealings, and to all mankind. If our study of the system does not lead us toward and through the floodgates of love, it does not reflect the spirit of the system. This is Eddy embodied in the textbook. It does not reflect the heaven of love within our hearts. The system Mrs. Eddy wove into the text must reflect the vital part, the heart and soul of Christian Science, which is love. Without this, she says, the letter is but the dead body of science. Students who have made a meticulous study of her seven synonymous terms for God and understand which ideas specifically characterize each synonym are able to recognize the monumental accomplishment of this 50th edition. The chapter prayer, for example, was rearranged so it unfolded in accordance with our present definition of God on page 465, namely, first, a section showing God's nature as mind, then a section showing God's nature as spirit, followed by sections showing God's nature as soul, as principle, as life, as truth, and as love. This fundamental divinely spiritual order was incorporated into every chapter, with the result that each step or stage grows in a divinely logical way out of the preceding one, and prepares thought for the next step or stage. In this way, the great statements of truth made in the first and other early editions became scientific truths, because they were now brought into definite relationships with one another. In other words, they were integrated into a coherent system. This divine order unfolded the spirit of truth, so that the birth of truth can take place in each individual consciousness. In this 50th edition, therefore, Mrs. Eddy for the first time wrote, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, in a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate anew the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. Note especially present application in the above reference. The system, she says, fills the present need. Speaking of this new arrangement, Mrs. Eddy says it makes the subject matter clearer than any previous edition, and it is therefore better adapted to spiritualize thought and elucidate scientific healing and teaching. In other words, to bring thought into accord with the divine subjectivity, which is the standpoint of the first edition. As we gain an understanding of the spiritual order which governs the relationship of these divine truths, the absolute letter, the inspired letter, begins to generate the spirit. The 50th edition brought tremendous clarification for the edification of the student, thus filling the present need. Chapters reordered. Mrs. Eddy was continually listening for principles greater refinement of the order and system in the textbook, since with her cessation of teaching, the textbook became the basic teacher. And in 1902, in the 226th edition, she rearranged the 16 chapters in the textbook, putting them into the order we have today, so that our textbook begins with the 4 Word chapters, followed by the 4 Christ chapters, then the 4 Christianity chapters, and finally the 4 Science chapters. This was another indispensable step in completing the system. Her final crowning revision was published in September 1907, in consequence of which she no longer copyrighted Science and Health. However, the last great major revision had been accomplished in 1902 with the 226th edition, after which the system in her textbook unfolded until it reached its perfection, its culmination in 1910. In the 382 editions which followed the famous 50th, published in January 1891, Mrs. Eddy rapidly completed the system she denominated Christian Science. Thus, gradually, over the 2 decades remaining to her, this testimony did gather momentum and clearness, until it reached its culmination of scientific statement and proof in 1910. Her divinely scientific system, brought to light by Mr. Durley in 1937, has today been unfolding in all its scientific elements in a most amazing, awe-inspiring way. In the final edition, Mrs. Eddy is at peace and rest. Her reading of the textbook throughout consecutively, which she completed on June 10, 1907, gave her a wonderful insight. She saw she had fulfilled all scriptural prophecy concerning her mission. She then, in the 5th edition of 1908, was able to put her statement about the inspired word into its present form after 6 years of continually changing it, and she confidently wrote, "The divine spirit has spoken through the inspired word and will speak through it in every age and clime." Thus she started the inspired word in the present, and from thenceforward, instead of in the ages past, as her former statements could be interpreted to mean, she clearly presents her writings as the inspired word. Simultaneously with this change concerning Science and Health as the inspired word, she placed her paean of praise and gratitude on the flyleaf of the textbook. "O thou hast heard my prayer. I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." What did reading throughout consecutively of the textbook in June 1907 reveal to her? It revealed the final answer to her question, "What is God?" When the next edition of Science and Health came out in September 1907, it contained 7 synonyms for God. The 8th synonym, being, was then shown as God, omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent being. And the 7 synonymous terms for God, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, explain what this one omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent being is. She realized that once we have seen the truth, once we have seen its constituents and how they operate, once we have seen this omnipresence of present perfection as self-existent and self-expressed, then it can be learned by all as any science is learned. Once she realized how completely she had reduced the truth of being to a perfect system, operating as a calculus of infinity in spirit and truth, through the wedding of the 7 synonyms for God and the 4 operational mediums of the Word, Christ, Christianity, science, within the perfect matrix of immortality, on the 4 levels of spiritual consciousness, she saw her prayer was answered, and that it was only a matter of time until all would learn it, as all have learned arithmetic, because their divine principle has been reduced to a system that can be taught piecemeal, and so assimilated piece by piece until the whole is understood. Once Mrs. Eddy saw that, once she saw how perfectly the textbook presented the system, she no longer felt the need to push it, but presented modestly the facts, step by step, the footsteps of truth. Then the higher discovery, which she spoke of in the 50th edition, becomes the discovery the reader makes as he studies the textbook, becoming his own self-shepherd and a law to himself. Thus was God's great scientist at peace and rest, as she realized she had accomplished her mission to complete the work of Christ Jesus on earth. It is sometimes asked, did she know what she was doing? Did she understand the system? Considering all the facts and her statement that science is the mind of God, and also that science and scientific are used nearly 800 times in the first edition, such questions seem presumptuous. In spite of the relentless campaign conducted, particularly against the reading of the first edition, it continues to be a best-seller among Christian Science literature, with many healings reported in the wake of its study. Just this week, the author received from a friend the following testimony. Quote, "My youngest niece became very ill, and my sister called me for help. The claim was one of malignancy. Because of the nature of this illness, I thought it wise to ask a more experienced practitioner for help. But she told me that she was working out the same problem, and I suggested I call the practitioner that was helping her, who happened to be also a friend of mine. I called this second practitioner and told her I was reading the first edition of Science and Health. She said, 'Fine, keep on studying it, and let me know your thoughts about it as you go along.' So with my sister's permission, she took up the work for my niece, and I supported this work completely, letting both of my practitioner friends know the healing truth I was daily gaining from my study of the first edition, and passing along to my sister the thoughts the practitioner and I had agreed on completely. My sister couldn't make the long-distance calls to the practitioner because of lack of funds. She could only call me. Within about 2 weeks' time, in working this way with the first edition of Science and Health, a healing of this fatal illness, so-called, was realized by both my niece and my precious friend. So the first edition has come to be, to me, a very precious book indeed. The reading of this edition was not popular in my family, but then they were not learning what I was in reading it either. The practitioner whose life was saved had been in the practice of Christian Science for over 50 years and is a devoted student of Mrs. Eddy's." Unquote. Several years ago, a friend testified that while she was confined in a ward reserved for terminal cancer cases, she reached out to Christian Science. The practitioner, who then came to help her, gave her a first edition of Science and Health to read. The practitioner herself worked only with statements in the first edition. My friend was completely healed. 2 other terminally ill patients in the same ward, seeing her wonderful healing, asked the same practitioner to take their cases, and they also experienced perfect healings of their so-called cancer claims. No loss incurred through revisions. Almost everything in the first edition is also in the last. This must be the case, since in the last edition she states she has revised Science and Health only to give a clearer and fuller expression to its original meaning. Also, that in the revising of the first edition, Not a single vibration of its melodious strings has been lost. Unquote. We know today the first edition contained the elemental completeness which William D. McCracken, proofreader for the final edition, was referring to in Mary Baker Eddy and Her Book. He states, "Subsequent editions of Science and Health never changed the teachings of the first edition, but they did seek to adjust its radical statements to human comprehension. They used more of the wisdom of the serpent, understood as an adroit idea, and less of the challenge of the lion's roar." Because of his close association with Mrs. Eddy in his proofreading capacity in 1909 and 1910, his statement carries weight and confirms what Mrs. Eddy herself has said in our present edition. We have vital evidence that Mrs. Eddy regarded with sacred tenderness these footsteps in reaching the scientific perfection of the final edition. She left a large estate in her last will and testament for, quote, "the purpose of more effectually promoting and extending the religion of Christian Science as taught by me." As taught by me would mean all her editions of Science and Health and Science of Man, as well as her other writings. Shouldn't each reading room contain a complete set of all she has published? Shouldn't a continuous supply of these treasured, priceless early editions be available for purchase by any student desiring them? Our business is to rid ourselves of the entrenched belief that there is a personal mind that can grasp science. The same mind that wrote the textbook is also the mind of the student who reads the textbook, but he has not yet attained this realization. The many revisions were made for the purpose of clearing away the obstacles and causing error and discord to lose its reality in human consciousness, and for the purpose of lifting the human consciousness into truth. This lifting of consciousness all tended toward the falling away of material, carnal concepts, and the development and realization of the divine character. Strengthening Our Citadel. Mrs. Eddy realized the sound way for humanity to gain divine subjectivity was via the system she incorporated in the textbook, which teaches us what God, our true being, is. All we ever need is to strengthen our citadel by learning the system she denominated Christian Science. In other words, know thyself. For example, we must know what we are as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. We must strengthen our understanding. This is in harmony with the method given in Pulpit and Press. Quote, "Imagine yourself in a poorly barricaded fort, analogous to our present imperfect understanding of our God-being, fiercely besieged by the enemy, animal magnetism. Would you rush forth single-handed to combat the foe? Nay, would you rather not strengthen your citadel, your understanding of the system she denominated Christian Science, by every means in your power, and remain within the walls for its defense? Likewise, should we do as metaphysicians and Christian Scientists? The real house in which we live and move and have our being is Spirit, God, the eternal harmony of infinite soul. The enemy we confront would overthrow this sublime fortress, and it behooves us to defend our heritage. We must entrench ourselves in the knowledge that our true temple is no human fabrication, but the superstructure of truth, reared on the foundation of love and pinnacled in life." Unquote. How do we entrench ourselves in true knowledge? By constantly turning thought to the contemplation of the seven synonymous terms for God and their ideas. As we proceed, we find this study has wrought a fundamental change in our consciousness. Thought becomes what it dwells upon. We acquire a particular quality by always acting in a particular way, the way pointed out in our textbook. We become more impersonal, and therefore more scientific. We do not interject a personal sense of self into the divine system of being, any more than we inject ourselves into the principle of mathematics. We become convinced that this impersonal, infallible system, which is not dependent upon human teachers, is the way that all can use to approach and become one with the divine I or ego, and so reach the same divine subjectivity that enabled Jesus and Mrs. Eddy to complete their great work on earth. There is a definite way to follow, the way Mrs. Eddy has pointed out. One doesn't stand on the mountaintop by a change of wording, which gives only a theoretical change of standpoint. The spiritual mountaineer climbs it step by step. Unless the human self is being evangelized, unless Christianity is being revealed through our character, we are not following in the way she pointed out. The first edition statements, while they are completely true about us now and forever, are the high goal to be attained by mortals, of whom St. Paul said, "Their minds were blinded, for until this day remaineth the same veil untaken away." Regarding strengthening our citadel, Mrs. Eddy often spoke of the union of love and justice, the gospel and the law, which in a sermon, she said, is our real house, the real home in which we live and move and have our being, wherein we abide in understanding and partake of the power of God. When love is understood, she said, it detaches our affections from the human standpoint and attaches them to the divine. The understanding of love wings our efforts, inspires our struggles, heals our hearts bruised in warfare with error. The Christian Science field is greatly indebted to Mrs. Alice Orgain, a most extraordinary spiritually minded Christian Scientist, for her deep spiritual interpretation of the Bible and the monumental work she accomplished in beaming much light on Mrs. Eddy's 16 other writings, notably Mrs. Eddy's Christ and Christmas, as well as in tracing Mrs. Eddy's spiritual progress through her 432 editions of Science and Health. Mrs. Orgain's research reveals that Mary Baker Eddy's illustrated poem, Christ and Christmas, with which all Christian Scientists are familiar, concerns itself with Mrs. Eddy's major revisions of Science and Health. Mrs. Eddy and her writings are one, since she can only be found in her writings. While her discovery of the Christ science, or the divine laws of life, truth, and love, in 1866, was a full and final revelation, it still had to be put into words which the world could understand and accept. The illustrated poem, Christ and Christmas, depicts the orderly processes through the progressive revisions of Science and Health by which Christian Science was unfolded, first to Mrs. Eddy, and then through her writings to mankind. Since, in reality, all is infinite mind, infinitely manifested as mind's ideas, apparent only as mind, in Christ and Christmas, Mrs. Eddy wanted to show the world how to look at everything spiritually. The pictures present the type and shadow of truth's appearing in the womanhood as well as in the manhood of God. Because so few were ready to look at all objects spiritually, in fact, only those were ready who were practical healers, Mrs. Eddy temporarily withdrew Christ and Christmas until she felt the field was ready for more celestial latitudes and greater, more spiritual altitudes. Mrs. Eddy's vision was continuous to the end of her stay with us in person. She made no mistakes in her revelation of truth, but as Mrs. Orgain in her books points out, Mrs. Eddy intermittently paused in order to demonstrate the truth she was writing. Jesus' prophecies to St. John showed that truth would unfold to the human consciousness in four distinct evolutions after the opening of the seventh seal in Revelation, 8th chapter, namely, 1, the mighty angel bringing the little book, 10th chapter, 2, the death of the two witnesses, 11th chapter, 3, the woman bringing the man-child forth, 12th chapter, 4, the city foursquare, 21st chapter. In retrospect, it can be seen that each halting and forward movement was actually the fulfilling of a specific prophecy made by Jesus to St. John in the book of Revelation. The structure Mrs. Eddy was building is a living church, or divine consciousness, which demands demonstration as it is being built. It demands healing the sick, reforming the sinner, overcoming discord of every nature, and raising the dead both literally and figuratively. Under the marginal heading, Our Footsteps Heavenward, Mrs. Eddy writes, "The discoverer of Christian Science finds the path less difficult when she has the high goal always before her thoughts than when she counts her footsteps in endeavoring to reach it." Unquote. The early editions contain a treasure trove of these footsteps heavenward. For this reason, they will one day be universally recognized and found priceless. The Little Book, Inevitable. After teaching and healing in a dynamic, inspirational way for 9 years through the spoken word, augmented by her handwritten manuscript, Science of Man, it was inevitable that the scriptural prophecy in Revelation 10 should be fulfilled. Quote, "And I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, and he had in his hand a little book open." Unquote.